I'm Brian McCreath at Symphony Hall with Ingrid Fleeter, who's here at the Boston Symphony for the first time, I think, at Symphony Hall. You played with the BSO at Tanglewood once, but welcome to Boston, Ingrid. Yes. And thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. And it's correct information you have just said. So it's first time for me in this hall with this marvelous orchestra. So it's a big, big privilege for me.
And I think as we speak right now, you just finished your first rehearsal with the orchestra.
Yes.
And I imagine maybe the reputation of Symphony Hall has traveled to you previously. Does the reputation match what you heard in the rehearsal today?
Oh my God, of course. This orchestra is amazing. The hall is incredible. The acoustics are so generous. So I can only ruin this.
I doubt
that. So you see, I have no excuse. And the pianos are also very good. So what excuse do I have?
Well, you have come to us, certainly at the radio station and to many others, as a player of Chopin's music. And in fact, you did the Chopin Second Concerto at Tanglewood a couple of years ago. But you're playing Mendelssohn with us this week. And so the place of Chopin for you as a musician is, in general terms, fairly evident, very central. I wonder how central Mendelssohn might be to your sort of life as an artist, for your sort of identity as a musician.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this belongs to a period in which Liszt was around, Chopin was around. I think Chopin composed his concertos near to this same age or year in which Mendelssohn composed. So that was in the air, the Sturm und Drang, the dramaticity, this kind of relationship to the music that is deep inside and very personal. So it's not about ever about showing off or about being in the spotlight or just showing your pianism. Even though this concerto is very brilliant, there is still all this depth to this cover, the coloring, the dramaticity of it, the story, the characters, and yes, the nature as well. Mendelssohn was very much related to nature, and I am very much passionate about. So when you start this concerto, it feels like an earthquake. You know, you're just thrown into this reality, which is from 0 to 100. So there is no presentation, no kindness, no say, hello, I'm here to play for you a very nice piece. No, you're there and the whole hall starts shaking because it's really very, very extreme, passionate and unsurprising. So this concerto speaks to me in a very deep level, I must say intuitively as well. So it touches my heart as Chopin does, as Schumann does. And if we think about Mendelssohn and his relationship with Schumann, it was so near to them. I think he was the godfather, was one of the children of Schumann. So there was this kind of soup boiling in the musical reality in Europe at that time, to which I feel very much related to.
That's very interesting. And when it comes to this particular concerto, as we were just joking a minute ago, I mean, the note to minute ratio is gigantic. I mean, there's just so many notes in this. It just seems that there's so much just flying by. And so maybe for a listener, the most apparent challenge for you is simply managing all the parts of it. But you describe it in such a way that it's as though you've moved past that, that you're talking about allusions to nature and earthquakes and things. And so tell me about that grappling with the challenge of the technique and how you do move. How do you get past that even?
Well, that's my objective. So I think every pianistic difficulty should be faced in a musical manner. So it doesn't seem just difficult and for the sake of difficult, for the sake of overcoming the difficulty. So if you have a musical objective, even if in a scale, you have a scale, a minor or a major scale, and you have to create the wind, you have to create passionate, wave that gets to the people. So in that term, it helps me get inspiration from all these thousands and thousands of notes that I have to deal with. Also, even if you see the score in the second movement, it's so black. It's all black, full of notes. But still, it has to sound very transparent, very elegant, and just accompanying the beautiful cello solo in the second movement. The last movement is an explosion of joy. It's so joyful and light, and a little bit of lightheaded as well. You know, why not? Why not to consider sometimes music and as entertainment? So all these notes have to have a, you know, a musical objective. And mine in this piece is varied, but for sure it's not to sound that I'm fighting against the music, but sound easy and natural.
And it almost feels like, anyone who isn't a pianist might look at these pages, as you describe, as all black. And the first instinct is to sort of zero in on some detail and sort of try to pick out the little tiny parts of it. But the way you describe it, it's almost as though you're looking at the music as almost big shapes, and that may help you into that wind behind it, as you put it.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. It's about lines and about waves and about breathing. At the very end, it's about breathing. How would the most natural way for a musician to think about music is how a singer would do it, or how a painter would draw a line. So that in this piece helps a lot to see the big picture.
It's almost like a painting, the big lines of the notes. Yeah. But that also sounds like I don't know. Do you feel like that approach, your way of looking at the music, of finding the wind behind it? Has that always been the case for you, or did you have a teacher along the way that sort of said, no, Ingrid, really, look at the big... I mean, how did that way of approaching this kind of piece kind of come to you?
Well, it's a combination of factors that makes you who you are. So it's very complex. Of course, it's about the people I met, the people I heard, the information I got from the right people, and the will... The personal will to discover always a truth, something underneath, something that is hidden that can make your day more exciting and that can make your relationship to the music more personal.
Okay, now, just in terms of the broader sort of shape of your career, not just a piece of music, but kind of what you do for a living, I think maybe for many people aware of your playing, the first real notice came in 2006 with the Gilmour Prize, which is a huge prize. It's just such an amazing thing to bestow on any pianist. Yeah. And so for you, I'm sure it made a huge difference. But of course, you were playing concerts before that and everything. But since then, you know, your career's really blossomed worldwide, concertos, recitals all over the place. For you, in these last, say, 12 years, is there anything, what's the biggest surprise about this life that you lead that you maybe didn't quite count on when you decided, I'm going to be a concert pianist?
Well, that it doesn't get any easier. I thought, you know, you get experience and then things become a bit more automatic and then you can just relax more. No, it gets even more difficult as much as you grow, then you discover more difficulties to overcome, more challenges to discover and to, So it is a difficult life, and it's all these 12 years has been a confirmation of that. But in these difficulties, sometimes you do have some marvelous miracles, discoveries, and moments. So it's worth it. It's worth it. So it's all these 12 years have confirmed that I'm a very lucky person to be able to do this despite all the difficulties.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, as mentioned before, a lot of people love your Chopin playing. You've just released a new recording of Chopin. And I know this Mendelssohn Concerto has been part of your life a lot recently. Just recently released a recording of that as well. What do you see down the line? What ambition do you have in terms of other repertoire, other projects that you might want to take on?
Well, sometimes this is a moment in which I'm in a, let's say, standby about what recording I will go for. I do have a project to record the Defaya, the Nights in the Gardens of Spain, this year, actually, we are already New Year.
That's right, it's 2019.
Yes. So that's my first. And then for solo, I'm thinking about maybe some small pieces, some encores, or maybe something that would give the people a possibility to take my recording as an island in which they can feel protected and inspired and get a kind of meditative state. I always wanted to make a CD in which people could relate to in a very personal way, that they could go and grab what they need from it. So I'm thinking about that. And in general terms, musically, I'm always searching for new streams of repertoire that I could develop. And for sure, Bach has been there talking to me and saying, when are you going to really take me seriously? I take him too seriously. He doesn't understand that I take him too seriously. So I'm going in that direction a bit more. So.
Okay, cool. And you know, now you mentioned taking a while to get around to Bach, but I was interested that your Nocturnes recording just comes out now,
yeah.
And yet Chopin has been part of your life for so long. Tell me about waiting this long to record the Nocturnes.
Well, the Nocturnes are a group of pieces that I grew up with. They have been my companions of life since I discovered the Rubinstein recording when I was 10 years old. So you can imagine what a challenge that would have been for me to consider that I have to record something that already Rubinstein did in that way, that for me was like God speaking through a person. So it's the essence of beauty, it's the essence of communication and feeling, and a pianist becoming a singer and not a pianist anymore. So for me, Rubinstein is absolutely unsurpassable from that point of view, and many other points of view. But I decided that I wanted to explore this music and give my impression about it now, today. I'm sure if I record it in 10 years' time, it will be a completely different music for me. So I wanted at least to close a cycle inside of me of a waiting time, and now starts the second period of waiting time until the next time, who knows?
Yeah, but I love that, though, that you referenced it earlier, the pianist becomes the singer, and
yes.
maybe that's an even taller ask in the Nocturnes than in a lot of other pieces, that singing just has to be essential in those pieces.
I agree. And that's one of the most difficult things to achieve in the piano, because it's against the nature of the piano, which is a percussive instrument. So you play a note, the note just dies right after. So how you create the illusion that the note is still alive. So that's very difficult and challenging. And for Chopin is the key. Without that, he said that. Without singing in the piano, please just close the lid. Don't blame me. So you see, it's for him, Bel Canto Italiano and Bellini was his god. So.
Yeah. Ingrid Fleeter, thanks so much for some time today. It's really great to talk with you. And again, welcome to Boston.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk to you.